hello and welcome. This is Social Studies, Voices Across America. I'm Bill Wood.
And I'm Peter Goldsmith.
I have a background in broadcast journalism since the Kent State shooting. I always look at that as a time in American history that everybody knows, but I've been splitting seconds ever since then.
I also have a background in broadcast. I've worked both domestically and internationally since the early 1980s. And at this point, both of us are now involving our time in online endeavors.
Today, we're going to start a continuing look at a growing crisis in American culture. Can we ever reassemble a broken America?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Bill. Yes, I think we can reassemble a broken America, or we wouldn't be having this discussion, obviously. But I think in reality, it's a very long and hard row we have to hoe. I think it won't be done quickly. I don't think it can be done easily, but I think there are some leading indicators that will set us off in the right direction.
Many have addressed this issue. Over our next few podcasts, we'll look at what could become the most important changes in American history, even bigger than, let's say, the social movement, the ethnic movement in the 1960s. Where do we go from here?
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting with this stuff, Bill, and I have a little thing that I've drawn up. It's called the three C's: communication, commitment to change, and consensus that there are better ways of doing things and that we need to start listening. Let me give you a quick example of what I'm talking about. Right now, most everything in our Senate is divided along party lines. Republicans vote with Republicans, Democrats vote with Democrats, and it's kind of foolish, and we should hearken back to several precedents that were set. Let me give you an example of three of them. Clinton and Gingrich worked together. Reagan and Tip O'Neill worked together. And here's the big one and the one that I really like. President Dwight David Eisenhower was the last president to appoint a Supreme Court justice from the other party. Now, you know yourself, and those folks listening to us know, there's no chance of that happening right now. Hopefully there will be, but there isn't right now.
That's an incredible stat to throw out there. The presidential victory of Donald Trump in 2016 inspired a record number of women to pursue politics. One NGO that supports women in politics said at 16,000 inquiries it's received about running for office since the Trump victory. The outpouring of interest has been so overwhelming that the organization has had to expand its Washington, D.C. headquarters quickly. We're going to concentrate a little more on women and other demography coming into the political process because, frankly, a lot of people are tired of men, and in particular, white men, running everything and having us at this point in our history.
That's true, Bill. And, you know, this week, the week of January 15th, the day of January 15th is the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., certainly one of the greatest Americans ever. And I think one of the things that Dr. King provided us with was a way to communicate peacefully, a way to enact nonviolence and social change, a way to listen to the other side, in Dr. King's case, with love. I don't know that most of us can get that far as Dr. King did, but
you know, I'm interrupt you here, Peter, and I give it right back to you. But it's important to me to understand the difference, because he talked about this in several of his speeches, that love is not love in the way we understand it. I look at love, what's more important than love, or better said than love, is respect. And I think that's what he was talking about, was that we just respect one another. It's not important for us to love one another. Certainly, we can love each other in a familial way, or we can't love each other in a spiritual way, or certainly in an erotic way, but we can respect each other, and that's a very real place we have to get to. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Bill, but I think the underlying thing of Dr. King's message, and I think we all interpret it differently, was love meaning understanding. Understanding where the other party is coming from.
Yeah,
understanding that we're all in the same boat.
And some that's of part of respect, be, yes.
That is certainly part of respect. Some of us may be conservative Republicans. Some of us may be liberal Democrats. Some of us may even be further right and further left. Okay, fine. But we all want the same things. I believe that my opposition politically wants the same end game as I do. I think the results are, the methods are different. And I think we have about understanding and listening to those methods. What is the methodology of one segment of the country as opposed to another segment of the country? What can we learn from the other segment? That's the difference. And that's the first C in my little chart here. But the second C is commitment to change. And this is the hard one. Are we willing to look deeply enough and change our own opinion? Can a fact or a better idea change us? Hopefully it can, but I'm not so sure.
That's a good, that opens up a whole nother rabbit hole, because the facts have become whatever people say they are. The facts are no longer truth anymore. We used to think that facts were facts, but now facts are whatever anybody says they are. And that you're absolutely 1,000% right that unless we can agree on facts, I had a friend once who told me that there are no absolutes or there are no facts. And I said, look, if you jump off a building, you're going to hit the ground. And depending on the height of that building, you're going to hit the ground hard enough to kill yourself. That's a fact. That's an absolute. And unless we can agree on certain facts as reality, we don't have a common place on which to have a discussion.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part about that is, Bill, why do we, and we all do it, I don't care who you are or what your ideology is or your spiritual bent, we all find something that we believe in, and we're almost impossible to pull us off that. Almost impossible. Even with facts and even with scientific evidence, if we believe something, our belief system is stronger than our intellectual system. And the belief system oftentimes rules.
Here are some facts, some things that we do know. These things happened. Women in Virginia pushed a Democrat to victory in the Virginia gubernatorial race. A transgender woman won in a Virginia House of Delegates vote. That was an incredible change in America's reality. A woman was elected mayor in Seattle, first time in a century. A black woman won the mayor's race in Charlotte, a southern city. And of course, now people are asking for Oprah Winfrey to consider running for president, especially after her Golden Globe speech. These are facts. Now, whether you agree with the Oprah thing or not, it's still a fact that people are asking her to run for office. These are different times.
Yeah, and I think also with Oprah, and I happened to hear that speech, and it was absolutely fantastic. However, I think that's totally emotional. And I think once people go back and look at the fact, I have nothing against Oprah Winfrey. Back in the early days, I knew Oprah, but let's stay away from that. She's a very bright woman. She's a self-made woman. She's a philanthropist. She's a marvelous human being. However, let's not go off and ask someone to run for president only on emotions. I think that's problematical. Let's ask someone to run for president who is a knowledgeable, fact-driven, and I hate to use this word, but it's true, manipulator who can really get things done. Not saying Oprah can or can't, and we've certainly had show business people in there before, President Reagan and Governor Schwarzenegger, two that come to mind rather quickly. But let's really think this through. Let's think what we really need. Let's see how we can build bridges. Let's see how we can, as you put it before, respect each other. And let's understand it's not going to be easy. You know, referring again back to Dr. King. We hear Dr. King's I Had a Dream speech and we go, it's amazing, it's magnificent. And of course, one of the greatest orators of all time. However, let's think a little bit further back what Dr. King had to go through to get to that speech, okay? Let's think about fire hoses turned on them. Let's think about beatings. Let's think about dogs. Let's think about the commitment to change that Dr. King showed all of us. Let's think about courage. Let's think about, as the saying is common now, but it wasn't then, speaking truth to power. Let's look at what happened before that speech was made. Let's look at what the country needs now.
This week we celebrated, you mentioned before, the January 15th, his birthday, Martin Luther King Jr. Had he lived, he would have been 89 years old on the 15th, maybe more than anyone else in history. He gave of himself to bring Americans together and stop the violence against each other, as you just mentioned. Curiously, he spoke of today. We always hear about his I Have a Dream speech, but curiously, he spoke of today's times in his Beyond Vietnam speech at Riverside Church in New York City more than 50 years ago. Let's listen to an excerpt now.
Some of us who have already begun to break the silence of the night have found that the calling to speak is often a vocation of agony. But we must speak. We must speak with all the humility that is appropriate to our limited vision. But we must speak. And we must rejoice as well, for surely this is the first time in our nation's history that a significant number of its religious leaders have chosen to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high grounds of a firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. Perhaps a new spirit is rising among us. If it is, let us trace its movements and pray that our own inner being may be sensitive to its guidance. For we are deeply in need of a new way beyond the darkness that seems so close around us.
Certainly we're at a time, Peter, when people are speaking out more, as he talked about there. And it is important, even though he was talking about Vietnam, he was also talking about people speaking out for the changes that they would like to see and how to become involved in your own government, in your own citizenship, in your own culture, to participate in it.
Yeah, I think that's true. And another quote from Dr. King, which I just found last night, is pretty interesting. And as you say, 50 years later, it still holds water. Here's the quote. "It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of this moment."
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's as true today as it was when he said it back in the 60s. Again, Bill, history always repeats itself, whether we recognize its mistakes or not. But I think we've locked up into a society where we feel a great fear for the other, quote unquote, whether it's the other party in politics, whether it's the other color of a person's skin, other person's gender, other person's fluid gender, whatever it is, if it's the other, we're fearful of it. We no longer have that acceptance to try and find out why. Why is this person for climate change? Why does this person reject climate change? Why is someone angry with transgender, gay, or lesbian people? Why do people think that the government is always at fault? Regardless of what side of the line you're on, we've got to start dealing with these questions factually, as we've been saying. Tell me why. Tell me what you don't like about something. And, you know, there are two ways, or probably more than two, but I have a friend who's written a book, Dr. Rob Pascal. The title of the book is called Making Marriage Work. It doesn't have so much to do with us right now, but it does. It's talking about how to approach an argument or how to approach people. You know, what can we ask? How can we ask the question in a positive, non-threatening way so that we don't jump up and down and scream and rant at each other, which is what we see going on now? How do we learn those things as a culture, not only individually, but as a culture?
You know, it's amazing, Peter. It's like you're looking at my notes here. It is important because we always try to look at someone else. What do they have to blame for the position that I'm in? And I didn't learn anything from education. I was never taught. But that's not the issue here. The critical question for those women that we looked at earlier, how did this happen? It's staggering. 46% replied that they improved themselves. I don't, maybe that's the wrong word, but that's all I can think of right now. They got to a different place in their life through self-awareness, that the process of knowing who they are is more important than someone else coming in and changing something, or going to school and learning something, that just becoming aware of self-awareness, whatever that takes, is what's going to, what they say, change their lives. And I think that would happen a lot for men. Certainly we have we've gone to a place now where every day, or certainly every week, we hear about some new man being accused of abuse of some kind, abusing a relationship in marriage, abusing a woman in a different kind of relationship. But if they would come to some more self-awareness, then maybe some of this stuff would go away. So maybe self-awareness is a place where we could start. Knowing ourselves better would help us respect others more, maybe. That sounds a little more 1960s, but maybe that's where we need to get to.
Yeah, and I think the idea here, Bill, and of course we've all seen the plethora of sexual harassment going on in this country. No reason to regurgitate it again. It's ugly and has no place in civilized society. But I think what's important here, again, it's a communication issue. It's a communication issue between men and women. And I think for far too long, we men have looked at that stuff like, yeah, that's not good. We disagree with that. But we've never taken a strong enough stand on it. And I think that's really important. I think women have certainly led the way. I think they've opened the doors for us to relook at each other, how we deal with things. And I think we have to come back and say, you know what? We have learned a lesson. This stuff is not funny. It's not cute. It's not anything but negative. And we have to police our own male brothers to say, guys, not cool, not acceptable. Not, you know, you lost your head for a minute. Not acceptable, you know. And I think that these are some of the things that, when they're on the table, are, you know, there's in the Chinese philosophy, most of us know there's a yin and a yang. The yin being a feminine principle, an accepting principle. Yang being a male principle, more aggressive. And the saying is, when things go too far one way, they revert to the other. Too much yin results in yang. Too much yang results in yin. And I think now we've gotten so yang, in the sense of so male dominated, so male white patriarchy, that we've shut out a great deal of people in this country and in this world, and we're now getting the blowback from it. I think that's really what we need to deal with.
You know, it's so true that it is a global problem, but since we're talking about two things here, we want to keep that in focus. How can we ever reassemble a broken America? And that's what we want to keep our mind on. We want to get a rabbit hole of what's happening elsewhere around the world. There aren't enough women involved in governing or changing or the overall process. In fact, the United States dropped 4 spots in the World Economic Forum's Global Gender Gap Index. I didn't know this even existed, but this was published last November because women's political empowerment has declined, reaching its lowest level in 10 years. So we do have a need that there's too many men, particular white men, who have a different idea of the way the world spins. We need to get more women and other demography into our government. Now, this stat, Peter, when I read this week, this stat scared me because I have I got five sisters. I've had a mother, a stepmother, all the women that have had an impact in my life. Maybe the most disgusting stat of all is the number of American troops killed in Afghanistan and Iraq. Between 2001 and 2012 was almost 6,500, 6,488. The number of American women who were murdered by current or ex-male partners during that time, 11,766. That's nearly double the amount of casualties lost during the war. Now, we had huge hand-wringing when we went to war, when we were at war, the body bags, all of that stuff that came back, the bad video, the terrible pictures, bombs exploding, all of that. We've had twice as many women killed by people they had put their confidence in America. This isn't in some third world. I can't even bring myself to say it, what the president talks about other countries. This isn't some other country somewhere else. This is America and the land of the free and the home of the brave. That number just staggered me.
Yeah, and we in Americans are seeing this disparity grow and grow and grow on every level. For example, the average CEO now makes 35 times what the average worker makes. That's a tremendous disparity. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. There has to be a way to understand what people need. I'm not talking about political parties. Let's transcend those for a minute. But there has to be a humanistic way for people to understand that people need to be clothed and fed and housed. They need to have medical care. They need to have education. We need to find the best ways of doing that. We can all bitch and moan and whatever side of the aisle we sit on or we lend our credence to, we need to address that immediately because that is what's tearing us apart. People are, you know, I spent most of my life in New York City, as you know. I was born and raised there. And, you know, there are people there making hundreds of million dollars a year, and there are people living in cardboard boxes on the street freezing half to death. Just that image alone should shock us into understanding what's wrong here. What are we not hearing? What are we not seeing? And most importantly, what do we have to do about it? Is it a government issue? Is it a private issue? For me, I think it's a little of both. I don't think it's an easily solvable problem. I think there are many, many people trying to do the best they can do. But I think right now it's a problem that we really need to address, along with everything else. That's why I said to you, Bill, you know, as far as it's going to take a long time, and the problems are not simple. And I think we have to understand that there are many ways of getting at the problem. But unless we commit to getting to the problem, unless we actually commit to really trying to make a change, we're in the same old boat of Republicans, you know, are talking to their friends about how lousy the Democrats are, and the Democrats are talking to their friends about how lousy the Republicans are, and we're going around and around and around. We got to break through this stuff. I live in an area right now in North Carolina that has a great deal of diversity as far as political diversity. And I asked many people that I know who they voted for and why. And all their answers were, whether it was Secretary Clinton or President Trump, their answer was because I was unhappy and didn't like that. Nobody said, I think this person is terrific and wonderful and is going to lead this country back to secure footing. No, but now this is anecdotal, of course. But what I'm saying is that's the person we need to get to. Or is the concept of a president outmoded? Do we go to a committee?
Wow.
I'm not sure. But maybe it is. Maybe it is.
That's wow. And we're going to, like we said at the beginning, we're going to be talking about, can we ever reassemble a broken America? That's going to be a part of this podcast for several editions as we go forward. Let's go back to the King's speech, Riverside Church, April 4th, 1967 when he was giving his Beyond Vietnam speech, but he talked about the urgency of what we need to do as a country, not just to come together, but to get involved and to make sure that we change the direction that the country was going more than 50 years ago. Here's more from Dr. King.
We can no longer afford to worship the god of hate, or bow before the altar of retaliation. The oceans of history are made turbulent by the ever-rising tides of hate. History is cluttered with the records of nations and individuals that pursued this self-defeating path of hate. As Arnold Toynbee says, love is the ultimate force that makes for the saving choice of life and good against the damning choice of death and evil. Therefore, the first hope in our inventory must be the hope that love is going to have the last word, unquote. We are now faced with the fact, my friends, that tomorrow is today. We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, that is such a thing as being too late. Procrastination is still the thief of time. If we do not act, we shall surely be dragged down the long, dark, and shameful corridors of time, reserved for those who possess power without compassion, might without morality, and strength without sight.
You can never go wrong listening to the man. His brilliance is overwhelming sometimes, but the urgency of now is so critically important for this issue, and to think that he was talking more than 50 years ago.
You know, Bill, that what's interesting about that clip you played, that speech was April 4th, 1967. And of course, 1 year to the day later, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. That's one thing. The other thing that I think, and I know we're going to wrap this up in a minute or so, but I think that, you know, as you said, you redefined love as respect, and I think that was exactly correct to do. And I think I want to use the word faith now, not faith in a religious sense, but faith in each other, in our own brothers and sisters, in our own community. And quote one last Dr. King line here. And what he said was, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase.
I was hoping, we've talked about that before. I was hoping that was where you were going. Because if you didn't, it's
pretty great. So, Bill, as we wrap this up, and I'll give you, you're always the last one to speak, but this discussion is not over. I think we invite anyone who's listening to it to respond to us positively, hopefully, or negatively, just as well. Either way, we're happy to. I think we should take this a little bit deeper, a little bit more far-reaching, but I feel this is a good start for us right now.
Social Studies, Voices Across America. I'm Bill Wood. That was Peter Goldsmith. Can we ever reassemble a broken America? It's a question that we leave you with. Hopefully you could think that over, and the next time we come together, you could bring some responses to yourself and participate in this conversation through the website ignituslife.com, and we want to hear from you. I'm Bill Wood.
Peter Goldsmith.
Looking forward to hearing from you.